You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We had a game that kept us up late, but boy, did that entertain everyone. I can tell you everything we have over the course of the next 3 hours, but it all pretty much comes down to a little Monday night football. Let's get right to it. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in L.A. taking on the Rams in the game that actually lived up to its much-anticipated hype in a big way. We picked this up in the fourth. Rams up 40-30. Mahomes hits Tyreek Hill for the 73-yard touchdown pass. Tyreek's second of the day. Chiefs within three. Chiefs would score a defensive touchdown, but the Rams would retake the lead with that Jared Goff to Gerald Everett TD, 47-44, less than 3 minutes to go. Mahomes finds Chris Conley. That gave KC the lead, but Goff would respond again. Gerald Everett, again, 40 yards. Rams lead 54-51. Mahomes trying for the comeback, looking, escapes, throws, and it is intercepted by LaMarcus Joyner, one of his five turnovers on the night for Mahomes. The Rams escape with the win. 54-51 was your final. 105 points, over 1,000 yards of offense, and the Rams are now 10-1. Here's their quarterback, Jared Goff, on their big win.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. Crazy game. And it seemed like at the end, whoever had the ball last was going to win. That's what it felt like. And ultimately, our defense had two turnovers there at the end that proved to be the winning turnovers. And it was back and forth the whole game. It was you know, times where we felt like we had all the momentum. We thought we were going to put the knife in them and finish it. And then there was times where, you know, it was the other way around. We're like, all right, we need to kind of claw back into this. And it was a fun one.
It's the same as when we played New England. I mean, it's just you can't make mistakes against great teams. And when you play these games, I mean, these are the games that you're going to play hopefully in the playoffs. And so you want to make sure that you limit your mistakes, but still at the same time be aggressive and still score points.
It was a whirlwind. I feel like, you know, I might need a couple beverages to relax tonight. But It was great. You know, I mean, this is what you love so much about this game, and really what's the best part about it is that locker room, sharing that with the people that you love, you know, the players, the coaches, this organization. But it was a great matchup, but it was just one game, and there's a lot of football left. We got to do a great job making sure that we respond, you know, we get ourselves healthy as possible, and we're refreshed and ready to go when we play the Lions coming back from the bye.
Such a good way to keep them all humbled. It felt like a playoff game, but to remind those guys that it was just one game and there's still more season to play. See, how impressive was last night's offensive explosion?
It was very impressive, and especially coming into the game, we have to realize that this game was originally scheduled to be in Mexico City. I'm sure the people in Mexico City wish they would have gotten the same type of game, but because of the field conditions and given the extreme conditions, the forest fires in California, those guys, staff members of the Rams, they weren't in their homes. Jared Goff had to be evacuated from his home, and they only got back in the town a couple days before this game. So you would think that there would be a lot of distractions and the quality of football would not be there. That was one of the things I was most impressive about. I don't think it affected the defenses. I think the offensive, the play calling, and the talent that's on those offenses, that's the way they would have played regardless. But I was impressed of how they moved the ball around. There was no one of the running backs, wide receivers, that they played a more prominent role, especially late in the game. You didn't know who was going to get the football.
Yep.
Typically in a game like this, you know where the ball's going to go, you know what's going to happen. And this was one, I mean, NFL, Big 12, welcome to the NFL, because yep. It was exactly, you could not, you know, turn this game off. And last possession, eventually we thought that was going to be the winner, Nick.
It felt like multiple times. The Chiefs scored to go up with less than 3 minutes remaining, and I think the response was, oh, you left the Rams too much time.
Yeah.
And then the Rams scored less than 2 minutes remaining. It's like, oh, you left the Chiefs too much time. And even after Mahomes threw the interception where Abukam hit him on the arm, they got the ball back, and you still thought the Chiefs might have enough time. There's never been a football game like last night. 99 years in the NFL, There had never been a team in league history score 50 and lose. And what, like, the both teams had an opportunity to enter that category with the Chiefs having the ball late. To me, last night was an example of, in a league with some of the best athletes in the world, some of the best athletes in that league and some of the best minds in that league on full display. There is no one in the NFL quite like Aaron Donald, and he put his imprint on that football game. There's no one in the NFL quite like Tyreek Hill. And while C's absolutely right, they spread it around everywhere, the skill position guy that had the biggest impact was Tyreek Hill with his 10 catches for 215. There's almost no one in the league, other than maybe Aaron Rodgers, that can make the types of throws, good and bad, that Patrick Mahomes can. And there's no minds in the league quite like Sean McVay and Andy Reid, at least to me. Sean McVay and his ability to, we lost Cooper Kupp. Todd Gurley's dinged up. Brandon Cooks is in and out. We will find different guys that can hurt you and to turn Jared Goff into this level of player. And Andy Reid's embrace of college concepts. The screen pass touchdown to Kareem Hunt had three guys running in other directions. So as Bart Scott would say, disrupt the defense's eye discipline. And he ends up having a walk-in 30-yard touchdown. It was some of the best minds and some of the best athletes we have in the NFL. And it's how we got what to me was an all-time classic regular season game.
I love that you brought that up because you look at a game, if you looked at the finals, 54-51, you thought, oh, this was just all defense.
All offense, rather.
But it was great defense. It was great coaching. There was great scheming. I think if you take the score aside, you had a lot of everything by both teams poured into this game.
Absolutely. With the rules, you're going to stress out these defenses. No one has five or six defensive backs that they can put on these wide receivers. Offenses have a huge advantage, but it was about the expertise of the passing game. How were these defenses going to come up with either turnovers? Because that's the thing now in the league. You got to be able to create turnovers and play good red zone defense. And that's what you saw in this game. Teams trying to hold on, trying to force them to have field goals, but ultimately turning the football over. I don't care how good your offense is. You turn the football over, it's going to hurt you. You lose the turnover battle, it's almost impossible to win if you lose it by more than one. So that was, as much as we've changed the rules, it's still old-style football. You got to take care of the football, and I think that's what Kansas City, that's the lesson they should take from this game.
Well, and C, you mentioned that teams aren't going to have five or six quality defensive backs. That's the other thing that jumped out to me in this game. We, a few years ago, after the new collective bargaining agreement came into place, we started talking about how there aren't enough quality offensive linemen to go around, that they don't have enough time to learn it from the college game to the pro game. It feels to me like we are, because of the new rules, because of the emphasis on almost freedom of movement of receivers, because of the way they have almost juked the stats to help quarterbacks and receivers, there aren't enough quality corners and safeties in the league, at least guys that are allowed to play the way guys played in the past. And so how can you make an impact defensively? It is more important than ever in this league to have somebody like Aaron Donald or Justin Houston or Dee Ford, guys, Abukam had the game of his life, guys that can make those flash plays, because you're not going to have a bunch of three and outs. Teams are going to accumulate yards on you, and can you have one special front seven player that can either take the ball away or, as we've talked about in the past, get a sack, which is worth about half a turnover as far as what the other team's going to do.
Well, you know, going into this game, the game plan for Sean McVay, they were going to attack Orlando Scandridge, the cornerback for Kansas City. Now, he had a chance at 2:15 to be able to put this game away. He had an interception. They were in two-man. He read it right. They had a sideline pattern on. He reads it right. He drops this interception. This right here, regardless of all the offensive plays, that was the biggest play in the game. Yep. An opportunity, Kansas City being ahead, an opportunity for him to be able to take the ball away from them to be able to seal the win. So, yes, a lot of offensive players, yes, the stats are really lean towards the quarterback and everything, but as a defensive player, we saw both of these teams on the outside. You get a chance a number of times to be able to make plays in the game, and you got to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
You know, I looked at the box score afterwards just to see what Gurley and Kareem Hunt did, just because of the seasons they've been having, and they were actually, they had quiet nights. No touchdowns, 100 yards, under 100 yards. Were you surprised that they weren't featured in as much, or because it was such high-flying offense, they were just going to throw the ball?
Well, I thought there was a couple things. One is, I know for some reason they didn't mention it on the broadcast, but it appeared to me Todd Gurley got dinged early, but about 7.5 minutes into the first quarter, he got rolled up on the sideline. He spent some time, according to the postgame reports, in the medical tent, and he didn't touch the ball again for about 8 minutes of game action. So I think that affected it. But the other thing that I think it was, when teams are passing like this, when you're getting 10 yards every time you drop back to pass, even if you're running for 6 yards a carry, like, passing is the more efficient option. The Chiefs had a healthy running back, but they were the team that was trailing for the majority of the game. So I thought both teams maybe could have relied on the running game more, but it's hard to say either team didn't play offense the exact way they wanted to.
Yeah, I thought Gurley a couple times earlier in the game, he had a couple tough little falls there, one where the guy fell on the back of his legs. But from what they were doing, this was the game plan. So unless Sean McVay tells me that, oh, Todd Gurley got hurt, to me, it was the game plan. We're going to run play action because it gave them the best pass protection, and it sucked up those linebackers so they can run those combination routes. 2-3 receivers, max protection because the protection. So Todd Gurley was supposed to be a big part of the game, but a lot of it was going to be as a decoy and running that outside zone and then using the play action off of it, because that protection is one of the most secure protections for Goff to be able to read the ball, read the field. And he can take more time when they have that type of protection.
Hey, we thought this was going to be a great game. It turned out to be a great game, and I think the fans won, even though the Rams walked away with the win here. Coming up, can the Patriots now keep pace in this new high-octane NFL? That's next on First Things First. We'll get to Tom Brady in a second. Couple of plays from last night that caught our eye. Jared Goff throwing a perfect pass to Gerald Everett, showing off his fancy footwork for the game-winning touchdown.
It's a hell of a job by Everett to stay in bounds and for Goff to recover after a big mistake.
Nick, who was that out there covering him?
Who was that? Oh, Daniel Sorensen, who's been injured, the guy you killed last year because they tried to have him replace Eric Berry.
Every time. I tell him, Andy Reid, you can't hide him. Every time that he gets on the field, we're going to find him.
Yeah. More from this game.
He sticks out on the Chiefs.
Big night for Samson Ebukam with the interception. Will not be denied from finding the end zone.
Tremendous play. This was one of several. This one will be highlighted. But at the end of the game, when Mahomes throws the last interception, he can't get outside. He's very, very disciplined. He stays on Mahomes' upfield shoulder, forces that last turnover to be able to seal the game.
Ebukam was absolutely outstanding. And this one, to bat it, it hits the right tackle's helmet, and to come down with it, that's a great play. A great play.
All right, moving on, a little basketball, the NBA. De'Aaron Fox, watch, spin off the defender, drops a dime to Marvin Bagley for the layup.
De'Aaron Fox is exciting. His second year from Kentucky, maybe a little disappointment in his first year, but, man, he's found his groove in year number two, and Sacramento's playing better.
Kings 8-8. Everyone thought that number one pick that they got to give up to Boston this year is going to be top three. Kings trying to make a little playoff push with De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield. Willie Cauley-Stein playing the best ball of his career. Go get it, young Houston.
All right, finally, a little Duke basketball. Zion gets the steal, delivers the vicious dunk.
Just a nonchalant windmill.
So it was a Monday.
Just a little nonchalant windmill in Maui, see.
Oh, we're going to see a lot of this, man. This kid is amazing, what he can do. But also, man, they got another kid, P.J. Barrett.
R.J.
R.J. Barrett, better player. Better player. We're going to keep on the highlights, but they got another freshman that's a better basketball player.
We'll see.
Don't say nothing.
We'll see on that.
I didn't ask you. Okay. I'm telling you.
I'm telling you.
How many points he had last night?
13. Zion only had 13.
Okay, how many the other guy have?
More than 13.
Oh, okay.
But that's one
keep
game.
A track, people.
Moving on to the Patriots.
RJ, PJ. I'll get your name right by the NBA.
RJ. They had this past week off, currently sitting atop the AFC East at 7-3. Not that that's hard to do, but that's for another day. They'll take on the Jets this week as they look to make their push to return to the Super Bowl for the third straight season. Tom Brady says everything they want to accomplish is right in front of them.
We're working through certain things, and we're 7-3. We got our biggest games ahead of us. I don't think that we played our best football. So this is the time of year where we've got a great opportunity ahead of us. We put ourselves in a decent position. It's not perfect by any means. I don't think we've played perfectly. But I think we built to this point where we're in a position to, start playing our best.
So I actually listened to this interview. He actually went on to say that he spent the bye week watching all the games all the games that they've played already up until this point. So he was fully dialed into what they were and weren't doing. So, Nick, after you saw what you saw from both teams offensively last night in the Rams and the Chiefs, can the Patriots keep pace with that type of offense, do you think?
Not the Patriots we've seen through 10 weeks. Like, now, what the Patriots won't turn the ball over the way both teams did yesterday. They won't commit a dozen first-half penalties or close to it the way the Chiefs did yesterday. They're not going to beat themselves. But you looked at just the overwhelming offensive talent. Take the quarterbacks out of it. And Brady last month hadn't been great, but take him out of it. Let's assume Brady come the playoffs is going to be awesome. With a lesser Gronk, with Josh Gordon that still is not yet seemingly fully on the same page with Brady, You look at what the Saints have, what the Rams have, what the Chiefs have, what the Steelers have even.
Yeah.
And you say, as far as a talent perspective, the Patriots are playing. Tom Brady's got a stacked deck against him. And so, I mean, I wouldn't count the Patriots out in any scenario because they're so good at the details. But as far as trying to win a shootout, I know they did against Kansas City earlier in the year. That was with Gronk a little healthier. That was with the team playing a little bit better. I don't think they can keep up with the top flight offenses in the league as we're seeing them right now.
Yeah, we always do this, and football is not a tell of the tape. When you look at the Pats, how they play, you watch the game last night, you'll be like, wow, how are they going to keep up? Well, this is how they're going to do it. The Pats have started 7-3. In the last 10 years, they've done that half the time. But they've only made it to the Super Bowl with a bye. So if they were to play one of these teams and they had a bye, you're not going to see Tyreek Hill have 200 yards. That's not going to happen to a Bill Belichick team. So, yeah, they might be able to score some points. They might be able to move the ball. But you're not going to have one guy be able to dominate the game. So, in seeing this, what would I say? It's not about the offense. Bill Belichick would do something about Kansas City and Tyreek Hill. Now, would Kelce hurt him? Would a healthy Sammy Watkins be able to hurt him? They have so many talented players on both sides. The way the Rams played, Patriots couldn't do anything with that. If Jared Goff played that way in the Super Bowl, man, the Patriots, they wouldn't be able to stop him because there's not one thing that they would be able to take away from him, which Bill Belichick is going to try to do. The thing about it is, it's not a matter who's the best right now. We know the Patriots are going to get better. It's predictable. They're always better as the season goes on. So now, in these last six games, will they go 5-1, will they go 6-0 to be able to get either that number two seed or that number one seed? That is the key to them. They will keep evolving, keep getting better. Let's see how the Rams, right, how they respond to this bye. All right, it's still a very, very young team. I do like how they responded after the loss to New Orleans, how they've come back, and how Sean McVay has replaced the overall productivity of Cooper Kupp. So those things, I think, are very, very positive going forward. But the Patriots, they will not be the same team in January that they are today. 7-3, they've done this a whole bunch, but they've only had that ultimate success when they get the bye. So that's what these last six games are about for the Patriots.
But it's also exactly what you said. The Patriots don't always beat teams because they have a better offense and a stingier defense. They beat teams because of their attention to detail, because of the way they prepare, because of what they anticipate, because of how they take away your strength and turn it into a weakness.
Some of the ways they beat the Chiefs in their matchup earlier this year, which is the other, Pat Mahomes made some mistakes, missed some passes early in that game, threw one bad red zone interception in that game. The Chiefs had to settle for three instead of seven, three separate times to start that football game. And so, absolutely, that's why, nobody should write the obituary on the New England Patriots until they're actually dead. But C's point on how important these last six games are cannot go overstated. Like, if they go 5-1, they will almost assuredly get a bye again. And we know that 12 times in the Belichick-Brady era, they've gotten a bye. Eight of those times, they've gotten to the Super Bowl. We know that they've never gotten there without one. And so if they go 4-2, if they're 11-5 and they end up as the three seed, we don't have a template and they don't have something to draw on as far as, oh, we've done it from here. So that is where it's where that the loss right before the bye was a tough one for them because they have less margin of error. But they got a big win last night. The team they're chasing for the one seed, the team they have the tiebreaker with in Kansas City. Now Kansas City's only essentially a half game up on them. But I do think it is the difference between being the two seed or the one seed and the three or the four this year in the AFC is going to be enormous for all four teams vying for it.
One thing that New England's going to have to face that speed, the speed on both sides. Because they run speed sweep sideline to sideline. That is not something this New England team, I believe, can deal with. And also, if they had to face them, that's why I believe 2 weeks would give them the appropriate time to be able to minimize the difference in how fast and what the Rams and what the Chiefs present. Because it's like college football, not just the plays, how they utilize the speed on the offensive side.
But despite all of that, do this Patriots team, does this not work unless Gronk is in and healthy and unless Gordon and Brady get on the same page? Or are you saying despite those things?
Oh, no, they need everyone healthy.
Yeah.
No, they need Gronk to be able to block, too, on that for that offensive line. The amount of pressure Kansas City and the Rams can put on you, you would need Gronk for that.
And I would say more importantly than Gordon getting on the same page is Sony Michel's health. I'd say Gronk and Sony Michel's health are the two most important things. Gordon getting locked in with Brady would be a bonus. I don't think they're baking that in, assuming that's going to happen by the end of the year.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, did last night's game hurt or help Pat Mahomes' MVP chances? That's next on First Things First. An NFL football Thanksgiving feast will be served up on Fox as bitter NFC rivals battle when Adrian Peterson and company land in Dallas to take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. It all starts at 4 Eastern on Fox.
Game of the year in the NFC East on Thanksgiving.
All right, time now for us to go viral. Jared Goff finished with 413 yards, 5 total touchdowns in the Rams' 54-51 win over the Chiefs last night. But the nature boy, Ric Flair, on the sidelines to see one guy and one guy only.
Hey, it's the nature boy, Ric Flair, live right here in L.A. to see my main man, Todd Gurley, and the Rams rock it right here tonight. The Chiefs go down. Woo! 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 Todd Gurley.
I'm going to tell you, he's a national treasure.
Yes. But
Ric Flair lost a lot of flair.
Oh.
I mean, his woo ain't what it used to be.
He had to take a lot of air in to get a lot of air out.
Takes a little more for him to get to where he wanted to get to. I didn't know he was such a big Rams and Todd Gurley fan.
He's a big football fan, big, huge fan, SEC fan. You see him
right
on the telecast and everything on Saturdays. Watching some adult tackle football.
Good stuff. Time for some stories to start your morning. Tyreek Hill had an excellent game last night. 10 catches, 215 yards, 2 touchdowns. See, how impressive was Hill in this one?
I'm so impressed, but he had a lot of tough throws that for a guy with his speed, typically don't have the hands that he has, and his route run has improved so much. Andy Reid talks about him, raves about him being a football junkie. He's all about football, and you could see he's in the backfield, he's in the slot, and his ability to be able to retain that football allows them to be effective. He definitely is a number one receiver. You can see the traits in him. A go-to guy, defeat the double team. Always a deep threat. So he's one of the most exciting players in the NFL.
And late in the game, the catch he made on the sideline, jumping where Sam Shields disrupts the ball, he secures it and taps 3 feet down to go along with it. He's made these running backwards touchdown catches throughout the year where he's falling backwards. He's been spectacular.
On the other side of the ball, Aaron Donald might have had the game of the season. 2 sacks, forcing 2 fumbles, 1 which led to a score for the Rams. Nick, how dominant was Aaron Donald last night?
He's playing the D-tackle position the best anyone's played it since Warren Sapp. I mean, that is the level he's playing at. I was talking to Chris earlier before the show about Johnny Randall, one of his teammates, who was the standard of his generation at D-tackle. I think he passed that off to Sapp, who we've waited a bit, but now it's Aaron Donald. He has been an absolute monster. 14 and a half sacks this year for Aaron Donald.
In between Johnny Randall, Hall of Famer, Warren Sapp. Let's not forget about J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, when he won that MVP, he moved up and down the line. But
sure,
a defensive tackle, man, it's very, very rare that we've seen guys be able to take over the game. Shortest path to the quarterback is from that D-tackle spot. It's a luxury to be able to have one, as special as Aaron Donald is.
All right, moving on to LeBron James now, riding high off his tremendous win over Miami Sunday, where he dropped 51 points en route to a Laker win. So after beating his former team in Miami, he now heads to Cleveland to try to beat his other former team on Wednesday. In an article that came out yesterday, LeBron is quoted as saying he knew as soon as the Cavs traded Kyrie in the summer of 2017, that was the beginning of the end for everything. See, what was your reaction when you read what LeBron said?
I mean, not surprised. I mean, it had gotten out that LeBron, from the beginning, when Kyrie had requested the trade privately, that LeBron was like, don't trade him. Like, don't listen to him. Don't fall to his demand. So I wasn't surprised by that. There were a few other things along the way as far as them not getting other players and not being able to acquire other players that might have been able to salvage LeBron staying there. But ultimately, it was in the cards for him to leave, not just because of basketball, but because of who owns the basketball team and Dan Gilbert. Him and LeBron, not unless they added another superstar to replace Kyrie, would LeBron stay there. It didn't fit in his business model as far as what he wanted moving forward. So I'm not surprised, not shocked at all, that LeBron, who owned two houses in Los Angeles, decided that he was going to go to the Lakers.
And this is all about Dan Gilbert. And this is this article that the Kyrie stuff, I don't think, was breaking news to a lot of people. But the nugget in there that I thought was great reporting was that as Kyrie was about to be traded, that Ty Lue drove to see LeBron, who was doing an autograph signing in Santa Monica, actually, got LeBron on the phone with the new GM, Kobe Altman. LeBron expressed, do not trade him. We can fix this. He's got 2 years left on his deal. And according to four people that were privy to the conversation, Kobe told him, all right, we won't trade him. And within 15 minutes, Kyrie was traded. And that's when LeBron says on the record, that's how I knew that Kobe was not going to be David Griffin, who was actually in charge, the previous GM, that this was going to be Dan Gilbert's operation. And it was that moment I said all last year that barring a Cavs championship, there was no way they could retain him. LeBron, it should not be overstated, the level of betrayal I think he felt when he comes back to Cleveland, signs a one-year deal, signs another one-year deal. They win a championship, he signs a 2-year deal, and so the first offseason that LeBron does not have the leverage or the power, the owner, Dan Gilbert, who he never fully trusted, never trusted, doesn't retain the GM and trades away the second-best player on the team. The 1 year LeBron couldn't exert his influence, Dan Gilbert said, I'm going to remake the team in my image. And the team is remade in his image now, being the worst team in basketball. Like, he got exactly what he wanted. I just don't know why he wanted it.
Well, quick question to that. They are the worst team. What, 2-13? Or is there a Cavs record now? Does that make what LeBron did last year with this Cavs team that much more impressive, CeCe?
I mean, they were bad last year. I mean, I was critical of them the whole year. So I'm not, I mean, I knew they weren't all right. I knew the ownership wasn't going to be all right. So it was very impressive what he did last year. But ultimately, it's still about winning championships. They didn't have enough firepower.
Yeah.
Getting that team to the finals was it was an accomplishment for him. But for LeBron, it's about hoisting that trophy. And last year, they didn't have a chance.
And what this does illustrate, though, is the level of almost delusion of Dan Gilbert, who once LeBron left, signs Kevin Love to a long-term extension and tells anyone that's going to listen, we're going to be competitive this year. Even though if we're not one of the 10 worst teams in the league, we lose our draft pick. We don't care. We want to be competitive this year. They're trying to be competitive, and they're the worst team in basketball.
All right, keep trying. Back to Monday Night Football now. Patrick Mahomes had another electric performance in prime time. Mahomes threw for 6 touchdowns, nearly 500 yards, but turned the ball over 5 times, including 2 that led directly to Rams touchdowns. So the Chiefs fall to 9-2 with the loss. Here is Patrick Mahomes on his mindset during the game.
It's the same as when we played New England. I mean, it's just you can't make mistakes against great teams. And when you play these games, I mean, these are the games that you're going to play hopefully in the playoffs. And so you want to make sure that you limit your mistakes, but still at the same time be aggressive and still score points.
It's really great to see how level-headed he is this early on in his career. What did you learn about Mahomes last night, CeCe?
He's got to learn the NFL game. He's got to have better ball security. You cannot be that loose with the football in the pocket. There were a number of times where only one hand on the football, and I'm talking about guys within one arm's reach, two arm's reach. Like, you have to realize, like, there's a certain mentality that, yes, I'm going to try to make plays, but a lot of times if I throw the ball away, those are also good plays in the NFL. So every play does not present itself for the big play. So you have to be able to try to, how do I minimize my mistakes? Throwing the ball into coverage, which late in the game trying to force it, you could see that. and the ball security. He's got to be more careful with the football, especially when you're playing against inside tackles, Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald. You know they're going to be around the football. So there's no excuse in a game like this for the lack of ball security that he showed.
Aaron Donald made a couple great plays early that we see the best veteran quarterbacks in the league. They get sacked on those plays, but they hold on to the ball. I can't count how many times I've seen plays where Aaron Rodgers, with those giant strong hands, it looks like it should be a fumble, and it wasn't. Those were enormous plays. Without those plays, the Chiefs win, I think, handily. And that is on Patrick Mahomes. I don't want
to
overread.
Well, what happened to the Chiefs' defense now? Yeah, handedly. Like, they still got to play defense, though.
Right, but they got 21. I understand that. But they got 21 points off the Mahomes turnovers, two defensive touchdowns.
I didn't see a defense that could win any game handedly against an explosive offense. I can understand what you're trying to say. Oh, they scored turnovers. But that defense was having a hard. Even if they had to go the length of the field, a shorter field did help them.
No doubt about it. But the point you made earlier is just the one I'm trying to emphasize, which is we know it's almost impossible in this league to win if you lose the turnover margin by multiple turnovers. It is impossible to win in this league if you have the other team score two defensive touchdowns. What got the Chiefs back in the game was one defensive score of their own. With that said, the reason I said I don't want to overreact is the Chiefs went into this game with the second fewest turnovers of any team in football. Those were the first and second lost fumbles of Pat Mahomes' entire career. I don't think this is a tendency for him, a trend for him. It was bad turnovers in the worst spots. But with all that said, as the play C pointed out earlier, if Scandrick makes that pick, we are talking about, similar to Ben Roethlisberger yesterday, the resilience of overcoming a few early turnovers, driving your field down the team down the field for the win.
Now, Nick Wright might be talking about that, but Chris Carter's not talking about that, because I knew those turnovers were critical. And in a game like this, this is why, and this is what Slarov says, you learn more in losing than you do winning. Just as you said that. It's 2 minutes, 15 seconds ago. Scandrick, he drops that. If he catches that, we're all, oh, man, what about the resilience? No. You still turn that ball over four times. Now, that fifth interception, that fifth turnover didn't happen.
It was three up to that point.
Okay, but it's still, you learn more in losing. And I believe if he was able to be critical, he would see. You said it. Other quarterbacks we've seen hit from the backside. They're able to hold on to the ball. So those things, I believe, are more important. If Scandrick makes the play, that's the reason why the defense is not a great defense. They don't make plays on the back end. So it is a problem, and I believe that you learn more in losing, and I hope that he's able to get that compared to if he had caught that interception.
What I thought was actually the critical turnover of the game wasn't one they scored a touchdown on. It was when the Rams, after they scored the touchdown to Everett, the Chiefs had the ball right around midfield, plenty of time, all their timeouts, and they're only down three. They don't need a touchdown. A touchdown would be great, but they don't need one right then and there. And they have plenty of time to be methodical with it. He went for the big play, and Abukum, who had a monster game throughout, hits him on the elbow. It leads to a wobbly pass. That was turnover number four. And then a Hail Mary shot at the end of the game when he got rushed, when he got flushed out of the pocket. That was turnover number five.
CeCe, explain ball security with a relatively young quarterback. Is that fundamentals? Is that his skill set? Is that because he's young? And how long is something like a process like that to overcome?
Well, this is game number 11. He started one game last year. There's no quarterback that's been in the league will be used to the intensity that you will be in the NFL game with the pressure around you. Only the repetition of the games. You can't, in practice, man, you can't get near the quarterback. You can't simulate this. You can't do these things. Now, there's a lot of drills that they do to secure the ball. And it's not as if he doesn't know ball security. It's just in the biggest moments,
right,
you have to be really special. Last year's Super Bowl number 52, the play that changed the game. Brady getting the ball knocked out of his hand. So if I'm going to use the same criteria in judging Tom Brady, who is the greatest quarterback, I'm going to use a guy that's starting his 12th game in Patty Mahomes. So when you have the football, you're touching the ball 60, 70 times a game. You have to have better ball security than anyone else on the team. And you have to know in a game like this, when they're bringing most of their pressure from inside, what do I have to do? And in those plays, even though the left guard got beat, even though the left tackle got beat, right guard got beat, he can help it by securing it and just get sacked. just getting sacked in those plays are great football plays, and young football players, they have to learn that.
And we saw there was one play late in the game, and they pointed out on the broadcast, where he almost sacked himself once he felt the pocket collapsing. He dipped his head and started to go down, maybe because of those fumbles earlier in the game. This is something, though, Andy Reid has talked about, walking the fine line with Patrick Mahomes, because his natural inclination, and thus far up to this point in the season, it has worked out for him far more than it hasn't, is to go for the spectacular play, is to try to extend the play, see if one of these freak athletes he has can break open. And in an attempt to go for the spectacular play, it's not his inclination to think a sack can be a good play. It's not his natural inclination. And Andy Reid has talked about not wanting to change his mentality,
don't want to stymie that,
but also wanting to make sure things like last night, where he had 7 turnovers on the year going into last night. He had 5 last night in a game the Chiefs could have won, trying to walk that fine line.
Yeah, it is a fine line, but you have to be able to take care of the football. And I would say that if I was worried about one thing with Kansas City, I wouldn't say it would be the ball security and things like that. I would say Kansas City and their inability to play clean football games from a penalty standpoint. Coming into this game, and it's not about the all-star crew that they had. It's about them having a poor technique, false starts. You can't just be a great football team and give people yardage the way the Kansas City. So I thought it was last week we had a question, what are you worried about with Kansas City moving forward? The penalties. So lack of discipline, team discipline in a game like this. You're going to give a team like the Rams 100 yards? You're going to give them a whole football field?
Right.
As far as penalties, it will come back to hurt you. And for me, it wouldn't be the ball security of Patty Mahomes and moving forward. Those things are very, very important. The penalties, game in, game out, nothing to do with the crew last night. It hurt them last night, especially to start the game with a number. But they had 9 penalties before I could blink in the game.
All right. Let's take a break. Coming up, much more on this. Who deserves the most credit for the Rams' dominant offensive night? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Coach Mangini. Eric Mangini joins the show. Hey, Coach.
How are you?
Lot to talk about today. Quite a game last night. You probably watched it.
Mm-hmm. There was a game last night?
That's exactly the answer I was looking for. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in L.A. taking on the Rams in the game that actually did live up to its hype in a big way. Let's pick this up in the fourth. Rams up 40-30. Mahomes hits Tyreek Hill for the 73-yard touchdown pass. Tyreek's second of the day. Chiefs within 3. Chiefs would score a defensive touchdown, but the Rams would retake the lead with the Jared Goff to Gerald Everett TD. 47-44 Rams, less than 3 minutes to go. Mahomes finds Chris Conley, and that gives KC the lead, but Goff would respond again. Gerald Everett, again, 40 yards. Rams lead 54-51. Mahomes now trying to mount the comeback, escapes, looks, and throws the interception to LaMarcus Joyner. One of Mahomes' 5 turnovers on the night. Rams escape 54-51, your final. 105 points, over 1,000 yards of offense. The Rams now 10-1. Here's their quarterback, Jared Goff, on their big win.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. And it seemed like at the end, whoever had the ball last was going to win. That's what it felt like. And ultimately, our defense had 2 turnovers there at the end that proved to be the winning turnovers, and it was back and forth the whole game. It was it's times where we felt like we had all the momentum, we thought we were gonna put the knife in them and finish it, and then there was times where it was the other way around. We're like, all right, we need to kind of claw back into this, and it was a fun one.
It's the same as when we played New England. I mean, it's just you can't make mistakes against great teams, and when you play these games, I mean, these are the games that you're going to play hopefully in the playoffs. And so you want to make sure that you limit your mistakes, but still at the same time be aggressive and still score points.
It was a whirlwind. I feel like, I might need a couple beverages to relax tonight. But it was great. I mean, this is what you love so much about this game. And really what's the best part about it is that locker room, sharing that with the people that you love, the players, the coaches, this organization. But it was a great matchup, but it was just one game and there's a lot of football left. We got to do a great job making sure that we respond, we get ourselves healthy as possible and we're refreshed and ready to go when we play the Lions coming back from the bye.
Coach, it's not often a game that we match up on paper turns into the game on the field. This was a doozy. How impressive was last night's offensive explosion in the Rams' big win?
Well, it was fun to watch, and it was fun to watch for a lot of reasons, and not just what we saw offensively, but also when you put the ball in the air that many times, what happens defensively, and you're putting those quarterbacks at risk over and over again, and you have the turnovers for points, the multiple turnovers for points. So I thought there was going to be a little bit more running in the game. I thought that they were going to incorporate some of that at some point during the course of the game. They sprinkled it in here and there, and I think at some point these teams, when they play games like this, are going to have to do that, because the best way to prevent the other team from scoring is to keep them off the field. And you've got two incredibly talented backs that became afterthoughts as the game went on, which I was most surprised about.
Coach, I thought this game was almost the test study, the case study for what football in 2018 can be. Like, with all the rule changes, with all of everything slanting towards the offense, and with the embrace of some college concepts, you're seeing teams that defensively, it's not about the yards you can prevent. It's not necessarily even about forcing three and outs. It's about, can you make splash plays? Can you, while the other team's going to move up and down the field, can you either stop them in the red zone, or can you score on defense or force turnovers on defense? I feel like, as a defensive-minded coach, if you were dropped in to this setting, even though it's not like you coached decades ago, it's just a few years ago, you would have to change some of the philosophies as far as what you emphasize.
You wouldn't have to change when a guy gets to the top of the route, don't grab him. Because hey, that's what we've been teaching forever. Like, their techniques are poor. Yeah, we know that the rules and stuff, but their technique, that's just poor coaching. There's a lot of bad coaching, how you're going to stop a passing attack, too. So I think Coach, let me jump in there before. I think Coach would be like, I think I can coach the technique that would, it goes through any time. You know, it's not the rules. Like, I mean, they play a lot of bad technique that leads to these big numbers, too, Coach.
Yeah, there's multiple penalties on both sides of the ball. There were receivers that were cut free. There were guys falling down in the deep part of the field. So as much as there were these splash plays, there was a lot of room for improvement on the other side. And I don't think this is what we're going to see, these types of games over and over again. Maybe a few more, but it's not going to be the overwhelming trend.
Yeah, even the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was a high-scoring game, but there were some times in there where teams had to get some critical stops on third down. And we could see both of these teams could rush the passer. So you know that. How do you be able to affect these things? Rush the passer and play coverage. I thought Kansas City made a huge mistake in the game by they were playing two-man. They were going to slow bleed, take away all the short routes and everything. The safeties take away the deep stuff down the field. They decide to get out of it after they convert the first down, and Scandrick drops the interception. They decide to go cover one man, and they put a guy who cannot cover on Everett on the outside, and Sean McVay and them dial it up. So you have to be able to play some type of defense. It's not the rules. It's about technique. Guys outside, you don't bump him. A guy's an athlete, let him run down the sideline, he's going to make a big play, and that ultimately was the winner for the Rams, Coach.
And I was surprised at the end of the game, or what I was looking for at the end of the game, and I know you're a big Mahomes fan, is I wanted to see him in one of those two-minute drives be able to bring the team down and get him in position to tie the game or win the game, and that's what I was most disappointed from him, because everything that happened throughout the course of the game, and then to be able to get the ball back with that much time and not be able to put together a drive in either of those two opportunities was pretty disappointing.
The biggest mistake of the game in my mind, and it's not close, it wasn't either one of the Aaron Donald strips. It wasn't the pass on the RPO, that the amazing play by Abukim, who got the pass, tipped it off the lineman's helmet and scored. It was his second interception. It was the one where they had 2 minutes, all their timeouts, they're at midfield down three, and you don't need a huge play. You don't have to go deep down the field. You can do it 5-6 yards at a time, and you don't even just have to go to the sidelines. That play where his arm got hit, he was trying to take a deep shot, and it gets picked. Now, the Chiefs did get the ball back again after that because Sean McVay was trying to go for the kill as opposed to just running the football, which I understand. That was the play that I think will stick with Pat Mahomes the longest. That was the play, because that was, and to me, an unforced error more than the other ones.
And I know you get frustrated with me because I'm not 100% on the Mahomes is going to the Hall of Fame bandwagon.
Last night when the game stopped, Coach texted me and said, I need to see more. I need to see more football. Five turnovers, not enough.
He's now tied for, what, third in the league in interceptions at this point. And the question is he going to be a make-something-happen guy? And something and Brett Favre was a make-something-happen guy and very successful at it. But at the end of the day, he's going to make something happen either for your team or for the other team. And if you can live with the volume of turnovers that come from those guys as they're trying to make a play,
but
then you get the upside of what they can do
offensively. But that's where I think it's misleading. If people just, and I know you didn't, but if people just watched last night, the Chiefs, Pat Mahomes had 7 turnovers on the year going into yesterday. Now he had 5 yesterday. That's terrible. No one's denying that. But he had not been a turnover machine, despite yesterday. Turnovers are a part of passer rating. He's second in the league in passer rating. Like, he's first in touchdowns, first in yards, third in yards per attempt. Nobody can deal with a 5 turnover game. But that has been the outlier, the extreme outlier on the season. It was 37% of his turnovers for the year came yesterday. Like, that isn't something that we can say. It's not fair to say the Brett Favre part of it.
It isn't totally fair to say that, but it's also not fair to say on the front end that this guy is destined to be the MVP or destined to be this or, and that's when I know you guys joke about needing to see more football. At the end of the day, we need to see who he becomes when people understand him, when he's put in critical situations.
Like
the last two drives. Who is this guy really?
And you can't always take chances. And people would tell you, and I know Mike Holmgren, I know Andy Reid, I know John Gruden, I know all those coaches that were dealing with Brett Favre. They'll tell you, Brett Favre could have been a lot better. So that's where we are. Like you, there were other quarterbacks that took chances, but they don't throw the interceptions. Interceptions are critical for your football team. So what type of chancer is he? Is he going to be a guy that I'm going to always take chances? Because as coach said, at the end of the game, there was no need to take that chance to be able to throw that ball in the coverage. Like in a 2-minute drive, you're trying to get 2 first downs and get to midfield. You don't see in a 2-minute drive people strike from 70 yards.
Agree.
The theory is I need to get 2 first downs and I need to get to midfield. When I get to midfield, they're going to start being aggressive. And then that's when you can start to be more aggressive as a passer. So those are things that you only learn in the heat. And he was in the heat last night.
I thought the last 2 drives for Mahomes, even the last one where they had less than a minute, but they had less than a minute and a timeout, and they only needed a field goal. I thought the mistakes there were, as much as the interception, the first 2 plays that net you 12 yards, both over the middle, those are rookie plays. Like, you know in that spot, 6 yards is not worth either burning your last time out or the 15 seconds it's going to take to get to the line. I thought those, and I mentioned on the previous drive, taking a shot when there's 2 minutes left in the game, you have all your timeouts down 3, is unnecessary. But you mentioned you want to see him in the fire. I would argue down 4 or down 3 to the Rams in that spot where he drove them down the field for the leading touchdown with less than 3 minutes remaining, that's in the fire. Now the Rams responded.
How did they score? What was that series? What did they do on that one?
That series?
Over those plays.
Okay. It was Pat Mahomes sacked for -3 yards after a Kareem Hunt run. Pat Mahomes scrambled for 7. Then they had the 4th and 2 where he hit Kelsey for 18. Mm-hmm. Pat Mahomes ran up the middle for 2 yards. He threw it to Robinson for 14 yards, threw it to Harris for 3 yards, and then he threw it to Conley for 10 yards.
All those other people were playing. They were playing. Their team was playing. Like, you just gave Patty Mahomes credit. Like, well, they have a good football team to be able to support his overall ability. At the end, instead of taking the chances, throw the ball out of bounds and rely on their talent compared to relying on your talent. That's what the reason why I wanted you to do it, because I knew it was a lot of different people involved. And that's what he's got to be able to do at the end of those games.
And we were talking about Roethlisberger's big turnover games and mm-hmm. Mahomes' big turnovers game. The difference is Roethlisberger won the game at the end.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.